Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup, Guy Dami, Dan Nathan, Karen Feinerman, and Tim Seymour. Tonight on Fast, the man with a penny price target on AMC. Lightshed Partners' Rich Greenfield is with us. Why he's sticking by his call that AMC is headed to a penny a share. Plus, we're all over the after-hours action shares of Lululemon, CrowdStrike, and DocuSign, all three stocks on the move right now on earnings. We'll dive into the quarters. And later, Tesla takes a tumble, the headline out of China that says shares skidding today. But we start off with Wall Street's summer blockbuster, AMC offering investors as many twists and turns as a box office thriller. Shares plunging 40% earlier in the day after the company announced plans to sell more than 11 million shares. Then in a major plot twist, they pulled it off. We mean all of it. AMC completing the stock sale. Today, shares closing down just 18%. And check out what AMC said today in a regulatory filing. Under the circumstances, we caution against investing in our common stock unless you are prepared to incur the risk of losing all or a substantial portion of your investment. What should we make of all of this, Guy?
Well, first of all, I mean, it's great to be back. And I got to tell you something. People don't realize how difficult this show is to host when we're all here together. You've been able to do this now for 14 months with us in all different positions. It's remarkable what you've done and our entire staff, the guys and gals in EC and the guys and gals here at the NASDAQ. I just wanted to say that because it's important. What do I make of it? Well, you go swimming out in California, you go to Australia and see those signs. You know, you can swim, but there are great white sharks in the water. But just so you understand, that's the same thing that CEO is telling you. He's basically said, listen, there's a chance that this goes to zero. Forewarned is forearmed. Now, if you're in for the fun and you just have a few dollars that you're messing around with, that's fine. But understand that the CEO of the company said the fundamentals don't line up with our stock price. That tells you all you need to know, in my opinion, Mel.
Karen Feinerman, you have been passionate about this AMC story. Adam Aron has navigated this Reddit frenzy like a pro, as if he's been through this before somehow. What do you make of this?
I don't know, I could have been through it before. I mean, he has handled this brilliantly, just absolute perfection. I mean, I was just looking today, he issued bonds in December, first lien bonds, meaning that that's the highest security you can have, 15% interest, 15, that's crazy. He was doing anything to just save the ship. And then the miracle happens and Wall Street bets, Reddit, they're all excited about it and the story gets a lifeline and he's able to sell some stock. Remember, that was like a 9 or 10. And then on conference calls, he says, they own the majority of my stock. I work for them. And the stock rises again, and he's able to raise more money. And then, you know, Reddit apes, they love Diane Fossey and the gorillas. And so he has the company donate $50,000 to that and $50,000 of his own money, which is just absolute genius. Stock goes up again. He sells more. He offers popcorn and discounts to his shareholders. Brilliant. And they love him. And then today he files this. Be afraid. You know, you're my guys and girls. You've helped me. I don't want you to get hurt. Brilliant again. I mean, kudos to Adam Aron. He did everything possible to save the ship. And I don't know if he gets her or not, but at this rate, he'll save the ship by, you know, the middle of June. It's extraordinary. Good for him. I don't know how he did it, but it's just masterful.
I mean, from a company that was staring into the abyss of bankruptcy, not knowing if it could survive the pandemic, to where it is now, Dan, I mean, it's night and day. Even if the fundamentals, even if the industry may not be pointed in the right direction for him, it's a dramatic change.
Yeah, listen, what Karen's speaking to is how he's operated over the last 6 months on things that are out of his control, and he's done it right. I think there was a lot of criticism back in January and February what GameStop did or didn't do in the same situation. I think it's really important to go back and remember, 2018, this company did about $5.5 billion in revenues. They did about $5.5 billion in revenues in 2019. In 2019, they lost $112 million in net income. They were already losing money on $5.5 billion in revenue. It's really the business is not coming back. Do you think those Reddit people are buying the stock? Do you think they actually use the product? No, they don't. They stream, they steal, whatever the heck it is that they do for movies. So I guess at the end of the day, it's fantastic that they've raised $1 billion. They still have $11 billion in a debt, and they don't generate cash, and they actually lose money. So they're going to be in a really difficult situation. And we also know after the GameStop thing, it's likely to come in a great deal in the not so distant future.
Or maybe we all just don't understand this new way of quote unquote valuing companies on Wall Street. Tim, I'll go to you because I know you're going to just laugh all over this. But Rich Gelfond, the CEO of IMAX, was on earlier today, and he said, you know what, far be it for me to try and understand the new ways. I obviously am missing something going on here, but money is being made, the stock is going higher. What do you think? Are we entering some sort of new era? I mean, I understand fundamentals are fundamentals, valuation are valuations, but are we missing something?
Well, again, the analyst community downgraded IMAX too. So, I mean, you have a dynamic here where, look, capital markets dynamics are very powerful. And let's also be clear, institutional investors are very much involved in this too. I mean, Mudrick Capital, let's talk about some genius here, by the way. I mean, these guys made $75 million on a major, major stock flip. So I think you've seen it from all sides. Capital markets dynamics, to the extent that a balance sheet can be improved, whether it's entirely cleaned up, is a very different story, I think the things that we're talking about. We applauded at $9 on a share raise. Why wouldn't we applaud yesterday and into today? So, I mean, you have a case here where, yes, that's all very good news for the company, but it's hard for me to argue with what's been said. Interest expense still significant for these guys. What kind of CapEx? What kind of OpEx? What's the real story for tomorrow? And being opportunistic and buying up a theater or two and maybe taking some kind of a leadership position in a much smaller addressable market, mm-hmm. even with theater exclusivities and some things that I'm sure Disney will do. But we're not missing the fundamentals. We are not missing the fundamentals.
No, I agree with that, Tim. And I think to Dan's point, I mean, the business model was broken. I mean, this maxed out, I think I mentioned it last night, $38.5, $39 in December 2016. Stock made an all-time high, and it spent the next 5 years going lower, long before the world ever heard of COVID. So I understand what's happened over the last year and a half, but nothing has fundamentally changed for the business. So to suggest that the stock can continue this meteoric rise in the wake of a failing business model, to me, is interesting in a word, but foolish in another word.
Well, yeah, and Guy, the kids are going to at you on the Twitter.
Right? I know they are.
Say you're unhappy that they're making money, and that is not the case. We've been talking about this for months and months. Let me tell you what has gone on over the last 6 to 9 months. Every pocket of like irrational exuberance in the markets has basically it's come apart. It's crashed. So we think about it. There's high valuation tech IPOs. We know they're down 30, 40, 50%. A lot of these meme stocks have come in. We know that SPACs have come in. And we know that crypto is now down 30, 40% from their recent highs. There's no reason to believe this shouldn't be the exact same thing in a stock like this. So when you talk about who's making money, yeah, kudos to Mudrick or whatever the heck they're called. And there are some institutions to it, and there's some individuals, but there's going to be a lot of bag holders. And that was the same thing that we learned in January and February when the GameStop thing came undone.
Or should we look at the retail trader, Karen, as maybe a new class of investor who might have the diamond hands, the stomach to hold on to this? I mean, are we underestimating them in terms of their willingness to be in a stock no matter what? They're already in a stock despite the fundamentals, despite the debt on the balance sheet. Maybe they're stronger hands than institutions.
Maybe. I think a couple things going on, though. I think for going back to GameStop, when that happened, I think there were some kamikaze shareholders there who maybe recognized GameStop, you know, was trading at crazy valuations, but they had the joy of really, you know, putting it to big hedge funds and seeing them in pain, and it was worth it, right? It was worth it if they were going to lose money. So there's that element. There's, I guess, maybe an altruistic AMC element here, but I can't believe that ultimately the gravity of fundamentals and free cash flow, I can't believe that that ultimately doesn't come into play. And, you know, Aaron's telling you that.
Right. Well, back in March, our next guest came on this very show after slapping a penny price target on AMC shares, saying there was no way AMC would be able to pay down its debts. Since then, the company has raised more than $1.2 billion in equity and added $30 billion to its market cap. Let's welcome back Rich Greenfield of Lightshed Partners. Rich, great to have you with us. And I know that you have the model. You're going to stick with your model. But at the same time, has anything changed? Has AMC at least given itself a small lifeline to sort of navigate the very, very rough waters of this reopening?
Well, let's just step back. I want to address something that you and the Fast Money team were just talking about, you know, in terms of diamond hands. I mean, just to set the floor in facts, in the last five trading days, it's traded 3.2 billion shares. There's only 512 million shares of AMC outstanding after today's 11 million share sales. So the idea that this is just people holding on to the stock and that they're never going to sell, just explain, like, how is this thing traded 3.2 billion shares? The amount of volume, it's the most traded stock in the entire world over the course of the last month. This thing is trading like liquid. There's no short squeeze. I mean, a short squeeze is when you can't get out. Like, there's not, you know, where the short interest is so high relative to what it's trading, anyone could be out of their short position in 4 minutes. Like, there's no liquidity issue here. This thing trades like water. And so I think there's a bit of a misperception that what's really going on is just retail buying from other people in retail. And, you know, sort of what was just being discussed, like, someone's making a lot of money here, and a lot of people are going to be left holding the bag, because at the end of the day, the fundamentals here just don't support the valuation. I mean, Cinemark, exact same company. I mean, same industry, same, you know, they don't own their theaters. They have the same movies that come out. Same EBITDA in 2019, effectively, as AMC. It's a $5 billion enterprise value. AMC is at $30 billion. Exact same companies, and one company's got a stronger balance sheet, Cinemark, than AMC does. And so this is just factually, you know, bonkers, literally, when you look at sort of the relative positioning of these two companies in the same exact industry.
So is there any way, Rich, in your mind to explain this? I mean, you've been through this.
Sure.
For a very
you can
long
definitely
time.
Explain yeah. this. No, you can explain this. Absolutely. I mean, when you have sort of, you know, a lot of investors buying dramatically out of the money call options and sort of creating this effective gamma squeeze, I mean, and you have a lot of, you know, funds that are playing on momentum as well, you can see how these spikes happen up and down. I mean, just look at the swings that happened today. Again, cutting through it all, though, ultimately, can this company actually delever? I mean, the only way to answer your question, Melissa, of like how this company could save itself from going out of business, it still has to issue 100 to 200 million more shares. I mean, it's losing money every day. It didn't make money, as you pointed out, in 2019. This company needs to raise a lot more capital. You saw what happened when it raised 11 million shares today. It probably needs to raise 150 million more shares at this stock price, let alone what its real stock price should be, where it would have to issue hundreds of millions of more shares. They don't have the authorization, though, to do that. So they need all of these retail shareholders to actually vote in favor of the company massively diluting them over the coming year. And so it's going to be very interesting whether Adam Aron can convince them to be diluted, because without dilution, they're really between a rock and a hard place. Like, they have debt covenants. They have to get back to 85% of box office by Q4 in terms of attendance, or they're going to start tripping covenants. So they need to issue a lot more equity, and soon.
Rich, you know, I think the world of you, it's Guy. By the way, you've been coming on the network with us for years, and I think you do extraordinarily thoughtful work. And I still do, by the way. This has not changed, because I don't think the story has changed. I think the only thing that has is the stock price. My question to you, though, is what have you learned since the date Mel mentioned, that March date? Have you learned anything in terms of, you know, the way you present things, just anything about the business? Because it has fundamentally changed now over the last 4 or 5 months in terms of your community.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'd say from an industry standpoint, I think what's interesting, and you had Ari Emanuel was on CNBC earlier. They reported their first quarter at Endeavor as a public company. And Ari last night on their earnings call was pretty clear that the film industry is changing, and we're finding sort of a new way in which movies are released. And so you're not going to see the same type of theatrical windows. Movies are going to come much, much faster to streaming and avoid theaters or be shorter in theaters. And so the film industry is fundamentally changing. that dynamic is completely lost on the retail buyer of this. They're not buying it because they look at the financials. They're not buying it because they understand the future of this company. I mean, if they were excited about the industry, they'd be buying Cinemark and IMAX and many other stocks. That's not happening. They're simply just being buying it because somebody else on a Reddit message board told them to go buy it. So it's sort of this follow the herd. And again, I don't know what ends this. I really have no idea. You know, the fact that I think it would be, you know, pre-open this morning, I think it was trading at like $75 a share. You know, I have no idea what changes the course of this stock. All I know is from an earnings standpoint, this company will struggle to ever get back to what it earned in 2019, given the changes in the film industry. It's way behind on its rent payment, so it's got a lot of deferred rent. It's way behind on its capital improvement, so its CapEx has to go up. And so it's got higher interest, higher rent expense, higher CapEx, and it probably never earns the EBITDA it earned in 2019. That's a really tough place to be when you're still sitting on billions of dollars of debt. I just hope Adam is smart enough to somehow convince all of these shareholders to absorb, you know, massive dilution from here.
Rich, we're going to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. Always good to
talk
to you.
Thanks for having me.
Rich Greenfield, Lightshed Partners. Karen Finerman, Adam Aron has earned the name Silverback amongst this Reddit community for his support of the Dian Fossey organization. Do you think that he will have the power to convince people that dilution may be in the end in their best interest if it actually saves the company?
Well, he has so far up to here. I mean, if you had said 2 months ago, listen, you're going to be able to issue, you know, $600 million worth of stock at, well, I don't know, 53 was the average price-ish, maybe. That would have seemed highly unlikely. I mean, and yet, here we are. So if he's like, guys, I need your help. It's really risky, but I need your help. Who knows? This is insanity. But good for him for navigating it. I don't get it as a long shareholder. I don't get it.
I don't think we could find a single investor IRL. You know how you play that game, like who would do this?
IRL,
raise your hand.
In real life.
That sort of thing.
Is that what that means?
I thought that was an internet thing.
It is an internet. But can you find a single person IRL who would buy that stock right here? Who would buy it right here as an investment? Like thinking about long term, after everything we just discussed, after everything that Rich, in a very sober manner, just discussed, there's no fundamental reason for it, right? So we have a stock market mania. We have people doing things that are against their best interest.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, it's your show.
I know. That question was rhetorical. On Wall Street, aren't there traders out there on various desks who simply trade momentum? There's no fundamental reason for a swing higher or a swing lower. But that trader on that Wall Street trading desk trades the momentum. And yet, why are we criticizing these investors
for trading
the momentum?
They're largely quantitatively based. I mean, they're basically, it doesn't matter if it's AMC or some other ticker, right? They're taking all these other inputs. I mean, what we're just describing here is that this is this diamond hand situation, stick it to whoever, you know, that sort of thing. It's a game. They're playing it on their iPhone. And again, if that's what you're in it for, have at it, but understand that this stock will likely be much, much lower from here, probably 50% in a month from now.
I miss the live have at it's with Dan, with Salty
right?
Dan.
It's different when it's live.
I don't think, I can only speak for myself, but I don't think I'm criticizing. I'm not criticizing this crowd at all. I've said a number of times during GameStop that these folks, these guys and gals, I mean, some of them are brilliant and actually understand the things that the people get paid to understand don't. It's fascinating to me. Gamma and all the options activity that you've seen, right? And all the all the metrics you use with options. They understand it intuitively. So I think it's fantastic. We point this out because I think we have an obligation to point out when things just don't make sense. It doesn't make sense right now. And by the way, I'm still not convinced there's not the Mel Gibson Braveheart character somehow using the crowd to his advantage. There's some group of people out there.
There's
we don't know.
There's a lot we don't know about.
And there's no question to me that the same way, you know, whatever they were 10, 15, 20 years ago, they're using these folks on these Reddit boards to their advantage as well.
Yeah. Let's bring in Mike Coe for more on another day of pretty wild options activity in AMC. Mike, what'd you see?
Yeah, so we saw a lot for the second day. It's the most active single stock option. For the second day, it traded more than 4 million contracts. I mean, it's just a world of superlatives here. And, you know, some of the comments that everybody was making about whether these are momentum trades or investments, I mean, options expire. So therefore, they're not a buy and hold forever. type of a vehicle to speculate on the change in price of a stock like AMC. And as evidence of that, the top 10 most active options in AMC all expire tomorrow. So people who are trading those aren't looking past into the weekend, even as far as AMC is concerned. And the most active options that we saw that expire tomorrow, believe it or not, were the 145 strike calls. So about 173,000 of those traded for about $1.17 at an implied volatility in excess of 1,000%, which actually starts to make options seem very hard to price, to be honest with you. So I think what's going on here is a lot of people are using options to speculate on very short-term volatility. And, you know, there are market participants in there. I actually know a couple personally who are professionals who are just trading the momentum. There is not a fundamental case to be made here, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a trading case, and that's what people are doing. But it's a very deep end of the pool stuff that people are doing.
Yep. Wise words. Mike, thanks. Mike Coe, see you tomorrow for the full show, Options Action, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. All right, let's get to DocuSign here. It is moving the after-hour session on earnings. Let's get to Deirdre Bosa with the details. Debo.
Melissa, like many of the work-from-home darlings, investors are wondering whether DocuSign can sustain momentum, become more than its core product, so that 54% revenue growth in the past quarter and strong guidance for Q2 and the full fiscal year, that is certainly helping to make that case, and that's why shares are up nearly 6%. Like Zoom earlier this week, DocuSign CEO Dan Springer, he is making the case on the earnings call right now that DocuSign is a platform that can go beyond and can service the entire deal process. So that means enhancements within that e-signature product, as well as other categories like contract lifecycle management. Springer also saying that he doesn't see the strong first quarter as pull forward, but rather simply increased demand and, quote, a very large ocean. He says they're still in the early stages of even the e-signature business. Meantime, though, DocuSign is facing increasing competition from the likes of Adobe with a growing sales and marketing business. Shares, as I mentioned, they're up nearly 6%. In the after hours, but year to date, they're still underwater. And of course, they were one of the best performers last year, tripling share price. Back to you.
All right, Deirdre, thank you. Deirdre Bosa, Guy Dami, this is one that you were watching.
Yeah, last night we talked about, and I thought the sell-off was such that, you know, it gave you an opportunity into the market today. Obviously, it sold off into earnings, and now you're seeing the pop now. But Dan's going to make fun of me again, as is his wont to do. But operating margins came in at north of 20%, a hair over 20%. The street was at 13%. And, oh, by the way, not only did they guide for the second quarter, they guided for the full year. And if you look, it's a pretty healthy guide. So I think the sell-off is such that you can buy the stock for a trade. Dan's going to say valuation doesn't make sense. He's correct. But you know what? You have the growth behind it, both EPS and revenue. I like the name here.
All right. Coming up, all green lights are Ford and GM. Both stocks driving higher in today's session. We'll tell you what sent the stock soaring. Plus, we've got more after-hours action coming your way. Shares of Lululemon on the move on reporting earnings. We're stretching into that trade when Fast Money returns.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Lululemon. Shares on the move after the company reported earnings. Let's get to Sarah Eisen, who has all the details. Just spoke with the CEO. Sarah.
Hi, Melissa. Good to see you. Lulu's business is still going strong despite reopening, back to work, back to jeans and dresses. Comfy athleisure still in. Sales rising 88% in the quarter. The company also raised its forecast for full-year sales. Store sales doubled, which showed that foot traffic returned in a big way, and e-commerce continues to rise, up 55% for the quarter. That's the direct-to-consumer business. The company is expecting 55 to 65% growth in its mirror business this year. That's the at-home fitness work product. And now says that it's adding it in 90 stores by the end of this month and 200 by the end of the year. Despite questions about subscribers and growth as gyms reopen and people work out together again, CEO Calvin McDonald addressing some of those concerns.
At-home fitness was a trend before the pandemic. It obviously accelerated during the pandemic, and we believe it will continue to remain an important part of how our guests choose to live the sweat life post the pandemic. And we're investing to create a very meaningful business. We see Mirror being able to have a solid standalone P&L. It strengthens our community relationships with our guests.
Lulu's stock a bit higher here after hours, but it has lagged this year, down more than 8% plus. And last year, over the last 12 months, down 2% after a multi-year run. Investors are concerned it was a pandemic play because it did so well over the last year. But so far, Lulu is proving that it's got good exposure to store reopening as well. McDonald was especially optimistic about his stores reopening. Also, he made the point, Melissa, that unlike any other retailer that we're seeing now post huge comp sales this quarter, McDonald said that his two-year compound annual growth rate, a good way to measure returns, is 25%, which he claims is higher than the rest of all of his peers. The stock is only up 0.5% as the whole growth trade really gets a rethink here.
Yep. Sarah, thank you. Sarah Eisen at the NYSE. Tim Seymour, I'll go to you on Lulu here. The move 0.5% in the after-hour session, is it good that the stock isn't selling off? Or is it surprising to you that the stock isn't moving much higher based on what seemed like a good report?
I think the stock, first of all, sold 20% or so off these numbers. It twice has gotten up around 380, 390 to put it in pressure. And then you have a multiple that's the pressure point here. Look, the valuation, very rich. But again, if you want to see where they're going to settle into a post-COVID consistent profile of DTC 55 to 60%, I think they will. And you know, the innovation here and the ability of this company to have pricing power, you heard them also on this earnings call talk about their gross margin improvement, a couple hundred basis points, despite freight costs, despite some of these dynamics around the port embargo and the tie-ups there. So look, I think you've got a case where, as an investor, you have to decide where you're willing to hold your nose on the multiple. You're almost doing the same thing with a Nike, and there's a lot of comparisons here with a much shorter track record for Lulu. But I think, you know, I'm not surprised to see the stock holding in here. If anything, I think it's tested the bottom end of a range, and I think it's going to move higher.
I agree with Tim. It's fascinating to me. That mirror product is perfect for Tim Seymour, if you think about it, for a myriad of different reasons. And Tim's not here to fight back, and that's okay. Not cool of me. But you know what I'm saying, Tim. I do miss you. I'll say this. Inventories were up 17% year over year. But guess what? Sales were up 56%. You know what that means for next quarter, in my opinion? That operating margins, which were great this quarter, north of 16, will be north of 20%. I think you can buy the stock here. I'm surprised it's not higher.
This is a disaster. So Mel said the fact that it's only down 0.5%, given the guidance, given the quarter. This chart is one of the worst looking charts in the entire stock market. It is down 20% from its all-time highs made in September. And if it breaks here, if it can't hold here, it's going back to that February, March low near 270, which was also the breakout level from last May here. So, you know, listen. Good news, bad price action, Guy Adami. What do you say to that?
I don't see it as bad price action, but I love the fact that we're together and Dan's getting in my grill. Salty Dan live. There's nothing like it. It's fantastic.
All right, fair enough.
Karen, what did you make of this quarter?
I thought it was an excellent quarter, and I thought the guidance was good. I mean, the Mirror acquisition, I think they paid $500 million. I think will end up being a home run, which is great. The problem is Tim brought up, right, it's double the market multiple. Double. And, you know, it's priced for perfection. They've delivered perfection. That makes it fairly valued right here. So I don't own it anymore. It's a really great company. But, you know, if a little bit of the post-pandemic slows things down a little, or even the perception is more pronounced that, okay, they were a pandemic stock, then I think there's downside.
All right. We've got a lot more ahead here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
No red lights for Ford and GM. These stocks putting the pedal to the metal. You better buckle up for this next trade. Plus, a tweet with some heat. Twitter announcing a new subscription service. So is this stock ready to take flight? We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva MagiWrite is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Lululemon shares on the move after the company reported earnings. Let's get to Sarah Eisen, who has all the details, just spoke with the CEO. Sarah.
Hi, Melissa. Good to see you. Lulu's business is still going strong despite reopening, back to work, back to jeans and dresses. Comfy athleisure still in. Sales rising 88% in the quarter. The company also raised its forecast for full-year sales. Store sales doubled, which showed that foot traffic returned in a big way, and e-commerce continues to rise, up 55% for the quarter. That's the direct-to-consumer business. The company is expecting 55 to 65% growth in its mirror business this year. That's the at-home fitness work product. And now says that it's adding it in 90 stores by the end of this month and 200 by the end of the year. Despite questions about subscribers and growth as gyms reopen and people work out together again, CEO Calvin McDonald addressing some of those concerns.
At-home fitness was a trend before the pandemic. It obviously accelerated during the pandemic, and we believe it will continue to remain an important part of how our guests choose to live the sweat life post the pandemic. And we're investing to create a very meaningful business. We see Mirror being able to have a solid standalone P&L. It strengthens our community relationships with our guests.
Lulu's stock a bit higher here after hours, but it has lagged this year, down more than 8% plus. And last year, over the last 12 months, down 2% after a multi-year run. Investors are concerned it was a pandemic play because it did so well over the last year. But so far, Lulu is proving that it's got good exposure to store reopening as well. McDonald was especially optimistic about his stores reopening. Also, he made the point, Melissa, that unlike any other retailer that we're seeing now post huge comp sales this quarter, McDonald said that his two-year compound annual growth rate, a good way to measure returns, is 25%, which he claims is higher than the rest of all of his peers. The stock is only up 0.5% as the whole growth trade really gets a rethink here.
Yep. Sarah, thank you. Sarah Eisen at the NYSE. Tim Seymour, I'll go to you on Lulu here. The move 0.5% in the after-hour session, is it good that the stock isn't selling off? Or is it surprising to you that the stock isn't moving much higher based on what seemed like a good report?
I think the stock, first of all, sold 20% or so off these numbers. It twice has gotten up around 380, 390 to put it in pressure. And then you have a multiple that's the pressure point here. Look, the valuation, very rich. But again, if you want to see where they're going to settle into a post-COVID consistent profile of DTC 55 to 60%, I think they will. And you know, the innovation here and the ability of this company to have pricing power, you heard them also on this earnings call talk about their gross margin improvement a couple hundred basis points, despite freight costs, despite some of these dynamics around the port embargo and the tie-ups there. So look, I think you've got a case where, as an investor, you have to decide where you're willing to hold your nose on the multiple. You're almost doing the same thing with a Nike, and there's a lot of comparisons here with a much shorter track record for Lulu. But I think, you know, I'm not surprised to see the stock holding in here. If anything, I think it's tested the bottom end of a range, and I think it's going to move higher.
I agree with Tim. It's fascinating to me. That mirror product is perfect for Tim Seymour, if you think about it, for a myriad of different reasons. And Tim's not here to fight back, and that's okay. Not cool of me. But you know what I'm saying, Tim. I do miss you. I'll say this. Inventories were up 17% year over year. But guess what? Sales were up 56%. You know what that means for next quarter, in my opinion? That operating margins, which were great this quarter, north of 16, will be north of 20%. I think you can buy the stock here. I'm surprised it's not higher.
This is a disaster. So Mel said the fact that it's only down 0.5%, given the guidance, given the quarter. This chart is one of the worst-looking charts in the entire stock market. It is down 20% from its all-time highs made in September. And if it breaks here, if it can't hold here, it's going back to that February-March low near 270, which was also the breakout level from last May here. So, you know, listen. Good news, bad price action, Guy Adami. What do you say to that?
I don't see it as bad price action, but I love the fact that we're together and Dan's getting in my grill. Salty Dan live. There's nothing like it. It's fantastic.
All right, fair enough.
Karen, what did you make of this quarter?
I thought it was an excellent quarter, and I thought the guidance was good. I thought, I mean, the Mirror acquisition, I think they paid $500 million, I think will end up being a home run, which is great. The problem is, Tim brought up, right, it's double the market multiple, double. And, you know, it's priced for perfection. They've delivered perfection. That makes it fairly valued right here. So I don't own it anymore. It's a really great company. But, you know, if a little bit of the post-pandemic slows things down a little, or even the perception is more pronounced that, okay, they were a pandemic stock, then I think there's downside.
All right. We've got a lot more ahead here on Fast Money. Here's what's coming up next.
No red lights for Ford and GM. These stocks putting the pedal to the metal. You better buckle up for this next trade. Plus, a tweet with some heat. Twitter announcing a new subscription service. So is this stock ready to take flight? We've got that and a lot more when Fast Money returns.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Tesla heading lower after reports of some bearish developments abroad. Let's get to Phil LeBeau. He's got the details. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Melissa. What you're looking at is Tesla under pressure on a report that it is suffering weak sales in China. This report comes from the information. We have not corroborated the information, but essentially, this is what it comes down to. In China, according to the publication, the information, Tesla's May sales were essentially cut in half, going from 18,000 down to about 9,800. And they also mentioned declining week over week orders, that they were not improving. What's behind it? Could be that we've seen a number of reports out of China about customer complaints hurting demand, that the image of Tesla, it's been beaten up a fair amount over the last month or two. As you take a look at Tesla versus Volkswagen, the reason we're showing you this is because China is the world's largest auto market and the largest EV market. It will be the largest EV market for the foreseeable future as that government continues to push incentives there. So, Melissa, if this is true, if Tesla suffered declining sales in May after weak sales in April, it raises the question, is this a pattern here? And if it is, it's not a good one, especially in a country where the EV demand and the EV market is growing.
So you think it's a Tesla problem as opposed to a China problem? And I asked you this, Phil, since GM and Ford are really ramping up their EV
right.
efforts, is this a window for them to gain share in the China market?
They certainly believe it is. Not just GM and Ford, but all automakers believe that For a long time, people said, wow, once the Gigafactory in Shanghai opens up, Tesla's going to clean up in China. These reports have to give some momentum to shares of the other automakers and their investors who are looking at this saying, okay, maybe it's not an automatic loss in China when it comes to the EV market. Remember, while EVs are growing very quickly there, it's still a developing market. So there's room for GM, Volkswagen, really all of the automakers to make moves and to gain share there. And speaking of the legacy automakers, Melissa, take a look at all of them. GM, Ford, Stellantis, which is the parent of Fiat Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, Daimler, BMW, all at 52-week highs. They have substantially moved higher, all of those stocks, within the last 3 months.
Wow. Phil, thank you. Phil LeBeau. Still going to use a Stellantis. Tim Seymour, in terms of where we are on Ford and GM, is there still room in this valuation?
Yeah, look, I think there's plenty of room in this valuation when we start talking about Ford and GM and Tesla as competitors. And if Tesla is an automaker, and this is an EV story, GM's EV business and their partnership in China already, to me, makes them the biggest player. So I think, look, we've said this many times on this show. I am long GM. I'm long Ford. I'm bigger in GM, and I have more, I think, conviction there just because of the quality of the operations there in addition to the multiple. So somewhere around 9.5 times, we closed it at an all-time high today after consolidating around the $61 to $63 level. I think you're just getting going on this as we've started to pay more attention to the EV profile. Look, Ford's focus on EV is good for GM. Meanwhile, GM is focused across autonomous, hydrogen fuel cell, and just their core business, which has never been more profitable.
Karen, do you think that the notion of a China market being a real viable market, I say that hesitantly because obviously GM is in that market in a very strong way already, but in terms of the EV market, do you think that's in the valuation? When we have this addition to the valuation of GM, to the market cap of GM, is part of that China EV or is that only US EV?
I think part of it is China EV. I don't think it's a substantial part of it. So I think, you know, they talked today about, they sort of said we're going to beat our numbers meaningfully. I don't know what that means. I think the street's looking for 225 this quarter. I mean, at 11 times multiple-ish where it's trading, that's saying, oh, that's a 30 cent beat. I think the focus of the beat is U.S. focus, though. So that's the bulk of the value. And so I also think the management at GM has done a masterful job as well. And, you know, they've navigated the semiconductor shortage, I think, better than some others. That's what's helping them here. So the China story is great, but that's not the bulk of the value.
Listen, I have to apologize. I just said in that last block that Lulu was the worst looking chart in the entire market.
Uh-oh.
It's Tesla. Carter Braxton-Worth put a chart out this afternoon. This stock is below that uptrend from the March 2020 lows. It's up down considerably, 35%. It's in a massive downtrend. If you get through that February low down there at 540, Guy, you were eyeing that. I think there's a beeline back to that $400 level. I'm just telling you, man. And usually you're looking over my shoulder and you're going to have to do some different things in this little setup here.
It's hard.
That's a bad looking chart.
No, it's an awful. And I'm the one that said when they reported earnings and the stock was trading 720 that this time tomorrow it'll be 750 and here we are $200 lower. Quickly though, kudos to both Tim and Karen. And we said the math problem in terms of Ford is $1.70 worth of earnings, 10 multiple. It's a $17.50 stock. Oh, by the way, on May 27th, RBC put a $17 price target on it.
Coming up, we've got even more after-hours action for you. CrowdStrike on the move after reporting earnings. We're digging into that trade in just a few. Also, we're going to dig into some AMC headlines. Stay tuned. Fast Money's back right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We got some breaking news on AMC. The company filing a proxy request to issue 25 million new shares in 2022. The stock is down 5%. In the after-hour session. It hasn't really moved too much on the back of this particular headline. Karen Feinerman, I go to you. What do you make of this? We were literally just talking about how much more they would have to issue in order to make a dent in their debt.
Right. I don't get the 2022 part. I would think they'd want to, you know, have shares at the ready as quickly as they can. Maybe that is as quickly as they can. I don't know. That part is sort of surprising to me. I would think they would file as big a shelf as they possibly can, bigger than 25 million. So I'm a little surprised.
I'm glad she said at the ready. If you Top Gun fans out there, you remember when Maverick was on Ready 5 and he didn't get the catapult up in time, and the guy said it's going to take a few minutes, and the head admiral said, I won't use the word he said, but it's going to be over in two. I mean, it's going to be over too quick. 2022, we're dinosaurs in 2022. I mean, I don't understand the point of the 2022 thing. This should be 2022, like, time tomorrow, 8 at 22 in the morning or something. I'm just saying.
I think they can put the shelf out there, whether they have access to sell the shares, is that's what Rich Greenfield was just talking about. They would need shareholder approval. So just put shelves. Anybody could put the shelf out there, you know what I mean? But you can't sell the shares, right?
So I see what you're saying. So there's no dilution. It's just simply
just a placeholder. Just the shelf. The shelf's out there. And then when they get the proxy approval, then they can hit some bids.
Or stocky.
No movement, or not much movement in the after hours on the back of this. Tim, your thoughts?
Never leave your wingman, Mel. I mean, I think that's the operative message here from Maverick. Now, look, I think the case here is you really have to take this day by day with this company. Ultimately, balance sheet repair is one thing. I think we've all talked about Rich laid out the share count and ultimately what you'd have to do to really change the fundamental balance sheet dynamic, the OPEX, the CAPEX, and the story. So, nothing's changed here.
All right. Coming up, we are all over the after-hours action. CrowdStrike, the stock on the move after reporting earnings. We've got that trade next. And as CNBC celebrates Pride Month all through June, here's CNBC's Shepard Smith.
I think to celebrate, you have to first be thankful. You have to be thankful for those people who came out when it was difficult and potentially injurious, and it could be a hazard to their health. And they did it for years and years so that all of us can live authentically. And I'm so thankful for every single person who did that.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got another earnings alert for you, this time on CrowdStrike. Seema Modi's got the details. Hey, Seema.
Melissa, just yesterday you guys were talking about how cybersecurity stocks haven't done a lot this year. Well, shares of CrowdStrike did turn positive and extended trade on its strong earnings report, but now basically flat on the hour. CEO George Kurtz referencing the, quote, heightened threat environment, saying it's provided more runway for longer-term growth. Demand is there for CrowdStrike's products. In the first quarter, over 1,500 net new subscription customers added in the quarter. Half of total subscription customers now adopting at least 5 cloud modules. So adoption of cloud is happening. That's something that analysts have been writing about. And Wall Street is taking notice. In fact, last week, Cowen & Co. named CrowdStrike its top pick in the cybersecurity space, forecasting double-digit growth, saying that the company should benefit from a future with more remote and hybrid work options. Its other top picks from Cowen include Cloudflare and Fortinet. And just worth noting, shares of CrowdStrike still trading down by around 14% from its 52-week high. Melissa.
All right, Seema, thank you. Seema Modi. We've had a lot of conversations about these stocks recently, and Tim, you have been behind this one. So what are your comments on the quarter?
Look, it was a beat. It was a raise. 1,524 new subs, 144 million in new ARR. And again, we'd seen the ARR growth 75%-ish, revenue growth 81%. I mean, analysts saying double-digit growth. I mean, high double-digit growth. High is also the multiple here, as we also said, 37, 38, 40 times revenues. And that's difficult. But where we are right now in the fight against, cloud and all types of cyber threats, early days still, and a customer base that's growing. So I kind of like this one, despite the multiple, as I said, multiple times. And the price action, you're not chasing this one. I think it's been consolidating around this 200 level, and I kind of like it higher.
Interesting, because we had Lulu, also good quarter, good guidance, not much movement into the after-hour session. We've got this one, fits sort of the same profile here, Guy, in terms of high valuation, but did deliver on the quarter.
It was a great quarter. Again, their margins were very good. And this Cowen report that Seema just talked about, May 26th, they talked about Zscaler. I think they put a 225 price target there. Palo Alto Networks, 425, they initiated the entire space. I mean, this is an excellent quarter, but to your point, you're not getting a price action that you should. Today, these stocks traded horribly on the back of all the conversations we had yesterday. Not suggesting we should have anything to do with it going up or down, but you would think, given all the news, these stocks would trade better. Somebody pointed out all the news is the reason they're not trading better, because if these companies were doing their jobs, you wouldn't have these hacks. I mean,
really?
It's a very circular thing that's going around out there, but that's sort of the meme people or the Jiffy people, or who are those people out there?
All the people on the line.
Right, on the line. Yeah.
Coming up, the traders are breaking down what they are expecting out of tomorrow's big jobs report. Do not move. Fast Money's back in two. All right, we are counting down to tomorrow's jobs report. Street expectations are high. Consensus looking for 671,000 non-farm payrolls added last month. What's the setup into tomorrow's print? Tim, good news is what for the markets?
Yeah, right, right. Bad news was good news last month. Remember, we were feeling probably one of the crescendos of inflation fears, and we were getting a rate spike, and it came at the right time. ADP this morning at 975,000, well above expected. Look, the dynamic is that the services part of the economy is humming, and finding workers is starting to become a problem. I know that sounds crazy, or getting people to come back to work. Let's see how that works into the equation. If you saw that ISM services number today, crazy high. I think all-time high. And the breakdown according to the services story. So look, I think there's a chance that this is a number that could catch people's attention to the hot side. At a day when we started, you know, we saw the 10-year sell-off about 0.3 of a point, starting to get back up near the top of that range, starting to see some volatility in markets. I think this is one the markets need to be careful about.
Hot side meaning it misses expectations?
No, I think hot side meaning it shows a stronger economy and puts a little more pressure on things.
Okay, Karen?
I'm sort of in Tim's camp, hot but not too hot, right? Because then that starts, if it's a giant number, then people really start to think about, all right, does the tapering timeline get pushed forward? So hot but not too hot is ideal.
The April number was a disaster, as we all know. 10-year yields before the number were 158. They immediately traded down to 147 and spent the rest of the day rallying and closing unchanged. So the bond market's telling you something, to Tim's point. I happen to think the number will be good. I have no idea what it's going to be. And I think rates go higher from here. I think tomorrow's a fascinating day for the marketplace, Melissa Lee.
All right, breaking news here on Bill Ackman's SPAC. Sources telling CNBC it is nearing a deal with Universal Music Group, which would value the company at about $40 billion. Do you have a quick comment, Dan, on this?
I mean, everyone knew they were looking. They had to have a huge acquisition here.
Big
so
target.
It kind of put a certain amount of private companies in that sort of situation. I mean, listen, music labels and stuff like that seems so last decade. I don't know.
Right. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Tim Seymour.
Yeah, Walmart, a friend in COVID, a friend coming out of COVID in stimulus and not. And a name that I think is actually cheap on multiple.
Karen Feinerman.
Yeah, so if the number is hot and multiples get crushed, I want to be in the big cap pharma space for me, Lilly.
Dan, Nathan.
Guy Tommy thinks the dollar is going much lower. He thinks it's going to be deleterious to the stock market. I think the dollar is going higher. I think you play that through the UUP on the long side.
Dan, getting in your grill, guy.
Nothing's changed. But I'll tell you what's changed. The DocuSign downtrend has changed. D-O-C-U, Mel.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast. We'll see you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.